Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm very pleased to be speaking today with Nancy George. Nancy is an assistant professor of nursing and the assistant director for the DNP program at the College of Nursing, Wayne State University in Detroit. Nancy is also the author, the co-author with her colleague, Jean Davis, of an article in our June issue, Assessing Sleep in Adolescence Through a Better Understanding of Sleep Physiology. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you.
Now, before we jump into sleep in adolescence per se, would you tell us a little bit about how you came to focus on this particular topic?
Well, I was I'm a family nurse practitioner, and I worked in a school-based health center and found while doing part of my health history that a lot of teens weren't getting enough sleep and didn't know much what to do about it, realizing that there's these multiple factors involved in sleep deprivation in adolescence, but started to do some reading. And then after I got my PhD and came to Wayne State, my colleague Jean Davis actually does sleep research in adult women on the other end of the spectrum, going through menopause. And so
that's another article.
That's right. And so basically, because of that, got interested in sleep in adolescence and started reading a lot of the literature, and she and I started talking about these factors, both intrinsic and extrinsic, that affect adolescent sleep.
Well, in the article, you provide a really good overview of the sleep physiology and changes that occur during adolescence. But for those of us who've raised adolescents and pulled our hair out in terms of trying to get them to bed and then trying to get them out of bed, I think everyone would agree that that something unique is definitely happening during that time period. So, but what is it that makes sleep such an issue for adolescents?
Well, you know, the easy thing to pick on is school. and I say that jokingly, but it really is kind of an issue, is that at a time when adolescents need more sleep, we're actually making them get up earlier and earlier. So as students move from grade school through to high school, they actually are requiring to rise earlier than most preteens. And that hour has gotten earlier across the past 20 years. And let's face it, not going to school isn't an option for most parents. So we really have to terminate what we call nocturnal sleep. So a lot of times what we're doing is we're actually what we call phase shifting. We're changing the sleep pattern, a natural sleep pattern of adolescence that develops through both intrinsic or biological processes, and we're importing this external factor on that.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time when adolescents really, from a biological perspective, need a little more sleep than what they're getting, and they need sleep in certain stages, we're waking them up. And so, therefore, school is probably one of the biggest factors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, probably in the last 15 years, the other factor is on the other end with the introduction of technology. So computers,
mm-hmm.
Phones, and I don't want to have to be the parent to take the phone or computer away from their teenager.
Right. Well, I remember back to in the dark ages to my own adolescence, and you know, all the good TV programs, of course, came on when my parents were telling us it's time to go to bed, and that's, of course, when all the more interesting programs were happening. And I remember one person saying, you know, everybody would be so much better off if they just reprogrammed the TV schedule so that those programs were an hour earlier. And I heard somebody saying that the other day, too, with computers and cell phones, that if there was an automatic shutoff that, you know, nobody under the age of 18 could use these beyond a certain time period, that we'd have no problems.
Right, right. I have a niece who's 15, and she texted me one night. I'm actually a night owl, and so I was up quite late, and I texted her back, "What are you doing up? You need to be sleeping. You have school tomorrow." And she's like, "Oh, my friend texted me, and I figured I hadn't talked to you." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, it was 2 a.m. So I was like, I shut my phone off teenagers are afraid to turn their phones off.
Right, right, yeah. And you had alluded to some research that they're doing on the screens themselves.
Right. There's some literature coming out about the effect of blue screen from the computers particularly. And with the advent of all the new e-readers, they're also looking at the effect of that type of wavelength of light. What people sometimes don't realize is the wavelength of light actually affects the reticular activating system in your eye, which contributes to that internal mechanism of sleep. And so when the original work was done on that, it was primarily the effects of daylight. They looked at I live in Michigan, so in the northern climes where you have longer days in the summer and shorter days in the winter versus in the equator areas where you have equal 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours mm-hmm. of night. But now this advent of technology has created this whole new thing where we've got artificial light and what's it doing to us. Mm-hmm. So that includes blue screens on computers and phones, the effect of television late at night, and then the e-readers. So there's some new literature coming out on that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because so many people read at night to relax and kind of just, you know, that's their way of, they're part of their bedtime ritual to for a calming effect. I know
right.
my husband and I and my family tend to all be big bedtime readers, but now several of us are reading Kindles.
Right.
And it'd be interesting. I'll have to start watching whether we read more on the Kindle than we do of a print book. That would be interesting. But what are you finding works with teenagers? Because we know that friends and are what's most important for them. But what can nurses help parents with? What would be something that you know might be reasonable that a teenager would buy into?
Well,
and I realize that's a loaded question.
Well, really, some of the things is helping the teenagers come to this conclusion on their own, and that can be somewhat difficult sometimes, but helping teens realize that having a set bedtime is really important, and that affects the architecture of sleep, so that if you go to the bed at the same time every night, we tend to have natural waking time, so it doesn't really matter sometimes. We've all experienced this mm-hmm. as adults where you wake up, my husband laughs, it doesn't matter how tired he is, he's awake at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
As a night owl, mine's a little bit later, mine's like 8:30 a.m. So it doesn't matter how much sleep you've got, your natural waking time, and that has to do with the rhythm, what we call circadian rhythms. So what you have to have adolescents help realize is that by having a set bedtime, you're allowing yourself to get enough sleep. Trying to assess if they get enough sleep during the school week or do they need more on the weekends, because some people assume that, oh, it's during the school week, they're not. But sometimes they actually get less sleep on the weekends just because they talk to their friends more, they're more active, those kinds of things. And so you have to assess when are they not getting enough sleep. So
let me ask you one thing. You bring up the point about the weekend sleep. A lot of times teenagers will, or a lot of people will say, well, I'm, you know, Sunday or Saturday, I take one day and I sleep in so I can mm-hmm. catch up.
Yeah.
Can you catch up?
The literature says no. it doesn't mean that you don't feel better because you got enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It just, once you've lost sleep, you're not going to get, it's gone. But does that mean that you shouldn't try to get enough sleep on the weekends after you've been shortchanged? The answer is no. Of course, you should try to get as much sleep as you can. But keeping it, this is the interesting thing, is you really, for all of us, not just adolescents, the real important thing is to have a rhythm to our sleep, that we have a set time we go to bed and we have a set time we wake up, no matter if it's the weekend or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, sometimes you always break that, but if the majority of the time you're maintaining your sleep, people will have better sleep patterns. So it's sort of the stages of sleep they go through. You have better staging of your sleep when you have set.
So it's the regularity of it.
It is the regularity.
Difference.
You know, it's that thing that I think we have trouble with sometimes called moderation.
Yes, and then of course, by the time children get to the adolescence, they've learned that you can stay up all night cramming sometimes, and then they get into those kinds of habits that continue through college, and I'm sure some of us do that continuous now when we have a big project or something due that we do that extra push at night and then get very shortchanged.
Right, and, you know, especially when it comes to school, there's been some, there's actually some research that says those are really, really bad habits even if you're successful at it, because they found that those kids sometimes do have greater other risks that puts them at risk for, because they're tired, risk-taking, depressed moods, those kinds of things, so.
And have they done research kind of relating the sleep, the quality of an adolescent's sleep to, or is it perhaps it's still in its infancy, but I'm thinking of relating quality of sleep to later health problems, you know, cardiac disease or those kinds of things. I mean, you mentioned depression, but I'm thinking in terms of other health risk.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There is some research out there that shows that the quality of sleep can be related to inflammatory processes, so that they the markers, the biomarkers of inflammatory processes in the body are higher in those that are sleep-deprived. So that means any of the metabolic-type disorders like diabetes or even cardiovascular disease probably has a relationship to sleep somewhat. Mm-hmm. So it's a piece of the puzzle. It's, you know, those are really complex illnesses, so it's not the only thing, but it's certainly a piece of it.
Mm-hmm. And this was not something that you really covered in the article, but just I'm wondering in the sense of, you know, the nighttime use of sleep enhancements. Now, there's the age-old warm milk, which I think the recent research says that it does help, versus now some of this new, you know, Ambien, these other medications that supposedly don't have the hangovers that barbiturates and the old-fashioned sleeping pills had. But I'm gathering that any kind of enhancement that's pharmacological interferes at some point with the structure or the phasing, and in the long term doesn't serve well.
Right. What they find with some of those medications is they don't enter the latent stages of sleep. And so while you might sleep the 8 hours that you want to sleep, you may never go into the deeper levels of sleep that are actually the most essential to the metabolic processes and resting.
Mm-hmm.
So most sleep researchers will tell you, and most of the sleep practitioners use those as sort of the last resort.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about retraining your body and your system to sleep without those things, and trying to avoid some of the things like caffeine, overstimulation, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So what might be, I mean, should we still be shooting for, you know, the 8 hours of sleep a night, or, well, I know everybody's a little bit different, but is that still what the goal is?
Well, for adolescents, actually it's about a little over 9 hours of sleep. They need about 9 hours and 15 minutes, you know, how research is on the average. But if you shoot somewhere between 9 and 10 hours of sleep, that is sort of the goal for most adolescents. And I think we sometimes forget, as the adolescent gets a little bit older, that they still are maturing from an organ perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So while they may look like this grown up on the outside, on the inside, there is some still metabolic processes that require that they get enough sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the goal is 9 to 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now for adults, the goal there is somewhere between depends on who you read. On average, around 8 hours.
Right, 8 still is 8. Okay.
But you have to realize that there are some people that their natural sleep cycle is less than that and always has been, and so that's mm-hmm. sort of the funny thing when it comes to that.
And yet I'm sure most of us get along with much less than that.
We do short-term, yes, short-term, sure.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, and it's making me realize, you know, how much sleep I don't get. But I hope our listeners will come away with this with an appreciation of just the intricate nature of sleep and the variability of it, and read the article to learn more about the specific cycles and the architecture of sleep. And you have a wonderful assessment list of some questions that nurses can use to help assess the quality of sleep that adolescents are getting. So that'll be very helpful. So, Nancy, thank you so much for writing the article and for spending these few minutes talking with us.
Thank you.